Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on September 2nd, 2020, from the rack room in the State House, which is kind of like the basement, but not really. It's not like a closet, because I'm wearing a tie. So if you hear some background noise, that's where I am. And just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at how state lawmakers are scrambling to safeguard the November 3rd election 2 months away. We hear from budget officials about how much money is available and how it may be budgeted this month. Guidelines were rolled out for limited outdoor visitations for nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And one of the largest cities in the state rolled back its face mask requirements. Because apparently, Mount Pleasant has beat the virus? I don't know. And in our wind down, I have a book report for y'all. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on. Like if you're going back to school, if your kids are back to school, if you're back to work, if you're unemployed, tell us how you're making it right now. 803-563-7169. And just a reminder, we won't have an episode on September 8th. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 2,652 deaths, and currently there are 118,699 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of September 2nd at 4 p.m. And now for some more data. There are currently 892 COVID-19 patients hospitalized. 228 are in intensive care, and 145 are on ventilators. These continue to be some of the lowest numbers we've seen in weeks for hospitalized patients. The current percent positive rate in the state is 19.6%, and we hit a new high on September 1st with a rate of 22.4%, very reminiscent of mid-July. So even though testing is coming down, even though numbers of cases are coming down, percent positive is still very high, higher than it needs to be. The South Carolina Senate approved legislation to slightly improve voter accessibility and add safeguards to the November 3rd election, which is only about 60 days away, something many lawmakers contend could have been easily done months ago, such as when they approved no-excuse absentee voting for the June primaries. Alas, they did not do that. And that's why we're here today. What the Senate did pass Wednesday was a compromise between Republicans and Democrats that again allows for no-excuse absentee voting, which means you can request your absentee ballot online without choosing an excuse. So you don't have to fill out any of that because we're under a state of emergency. But unlike the June primaries, a witness signature will still be required on the absentee ballot envelope if this bill becomes law. So this passed the Senate, still needs to pass the House, we'll see what they do. But continuing on here, let's go to the Senate floor, where even Lizard Man, get a load of this folks, Lizard Man was mentioned by Senator Dick Karpulian, who was talking about voting.
However, to get back to the point, there are and have been people who said they saw Lizard Man, but to my knowledge, no one has said they've seen voter fraud. So this concern about security is overblown. There's no massive people that are going to come in and stuff the ballot box. Not that it hasn't happened in the distant past. Senator from Charleston, I must tell you that stories that from the 40s and 50s in Charleston amaze me. I've heard from Senator Hollings over the years about how they conducted elections. In Charleston. But that's not the situation today. So let us not confuse security with the ability to exclude people or discourage people from voting.
Karpulian, a Columbia Democrat, introduced several amendments, including expanding drop boxes, centralized curbside voting locations, and getting rid of the witness signature requirement for absentee voting. All those amendments were voted down by Republicans since a deal, which doesn't do any of those things, was already struck. It passed 41-0. So again, this is important because unlike the primary, when they got rid of the absentee ballot witness signature, the Senate is now requiring it. Remember, we still have to see what the Republican-controlled House does, if anything. Now, Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey outlined additional items that the bill does do.
That amendment will protect the safety of the voter and the integrity of the vote. We are not changing permanent law today. That amendment does 8 things, and we'll get to them in a little bit, and I'll have to get to them maybe in a little bit more detail, but that amendment does 8 things, most of which we did last time. It would allow for no excuse absentee voting if we're under the state of emergency, same language that we had in May. It provides a schedule for when absentee ballot applications must be received. Provides for the return of absentee ballots to clarify that in-person returns must be submitted to staff or election office personnel. Provides that in-office absentee voting must begin on October 5th. It allows the initial examination of outer envelopes to begin on Sunday morning before the election, and the tabulation is to begin on Tuesday morning earlier than normal. It provides for public notice for the examination of these absentee ballots. It provides social distancing policies and other safety measures that must be used to the extent practicable. And importantly, it requires the State Election Commission to establish an aggressive voter education campaign about these changes.
And North Charleston Democratic Senator Marlon Kimpson.
We in a pandemic.
Notice that these aren't all the requests made by the State Election Commission Director, Marcy Andino.
We are duty bound to understand that the amendment that we're going to vote on in a minute does not incorporate all of the elements of what the election commissioner recommended. Now, can we get some progress? Probably. But South Carolina, we've been incrementally in changing, and that leads us to the predicament we're in here today. We do small things, but it takes courage, no courage, to sail the placid seas of contentment and do small things, but it takes real courage to do big things. And all of us know that we ought to have in the state of South Carolina early voting, not absentee voting, and we ought to be able to do it by electronic means.
Now, this bill won't make it to the governor's desk for another 2 weeks at the earliest, and that is only if the House approves a bill when it returns September 15th. Of course, the House may want to pass their own bill or amend this Senate one and send it back to the Senate. That all takes time, and we don't have much of it. Down to the wire, of course. Now, if you are voting by mail, you must request your application for a ballot by 5 p.m. Saturday, October 24th. You might want to do it way before then if you're, you know, doing it by mail. As of right now, you'll need to choose an excuse if you do that. In-person absentee voting will start October 5th at your county election commission. Now, before we get out of this political section, I want to mention one thing that we saw develop over the past few days. No, it's not that school's back and it's not that Labor Day weekend is coming up. Nope. That's what it is, ladies and gentlemen. The City Council of Mount Pleasant, the fourth largest city in the state, has voted that its citizens no longer need to wear face masks in grocery stores or pharmacies. Apparently, they've figured out a better way to outsmart the virus. Wow, this is some breaking news here down in Mount Pleasant. It's unclear what this is, since wearing masks proved to be one of the best lines of defense against the virus that has killed more than 2,600 South Carolinians. Anyway, it's good to hear that Mount Pleasant is doing well and apparently no longer has to bother with a simple piece of cloth over their faces when they shop. We're wishing you all the best as I continue to stay on this side of the Ravenel Bridge for the foreseeable future. So we got some economic news for you. The pandemic has helped spur some people living in big, dense cities to move toward less dense areas like Vermont, Idaho, Oregon, and South Carolina, according to data provided to Bloomberg News by United Van Lines. About 1 in 5 Americans either have relocated during the virus outbreak or know someone who has, according to Pew Research Center's survey published July 6. While many businesses are arranging for employees to work from home and holding meetings via apps like Zoom that can be done from anywhere, William Frey, a Brookings Institution senior fellow and demographer for the past 4 decades, says cities like New York will be back over time. Quote, saying, "These recent population shifts, if real, will be short-lived and change when the pandemic subsides. young adult Gen Zers could find cities attractive anew, just as cities gained appeal among millennials after the 2007 to 2009 recession. Now, this is a positive trend we've also been hearing a lot about from state economists like Joey Von Nessen, who was recently on the pod. Moving on, the Senate Finance Committee met on Tuesday to hear about how much money they'll have to craft a budget when they return later this month. The good news is that there is more than $800 million, though nearly all that is one-time dollars, and there's also an additional $600 million coming from the feds for the plutonium settlement. Again, that's a lot of one-time money, which can help plug holes to stave off any budget cuts and also fund capital investments like infrastructure and repairs. Of that, only some $86 million is forecasted as recurring money, meaning that it could go towards something that needs to be funded annually, like operating costs or salaries. And even still, that money is just an estimate and is pretty volatile. Here is Frank Rainwater, Director of the Revenue Fiscal Affairs Office, presenting during the Zoom finance meeting.
So even after you adjust for the accruals, we appear to be on it still on a downward trend in revenue growth. Revenue and the economy, they go hand in hand, but they're not real time. They're not one-on-one. Sometimes there's a delayed effect. So while we're looking at this decline, we're still not sure have we bottomed out. And we're also concerned what's going to happen next year in April, on April 15th. The accruals, what helped out and helped us make the estimate this year was based on business activity in 2019. Our income tax in a year from now, our revenues for April 15 are going to depend on what businesses are doing in 2020. On one side, we know that withholdings, employer withholdings is doing well despite the unemployment increase, that we have more people paying payroll taxes this year than compared to a month ago. Not as much growth as we've seen, but it's not in the negative category. What we don't have good information is on business activities. Small businesses and large businesses are those of you who are in business and have to make estimated declarations. We don't have a good insight yet on that income level. We're waiting for October to get more information on estimated payments to see how that's turning out. But that is the big uncertainty that we are facing. Economically, we may have bottomed out, but we're not going to see that full impact until people file their taxes next year. And we actually have a negative built in our income tax forecast for this year.
Despite the uncertainty of what might happen this fiscal year, there's still optimism thanks to the substantial one-time dollars that are there and the timing in which the pandemic hit, which was at the tail end of the previous fiscal year that ended June 30th.
We're in a great position from where the budget finished last year and how the economy performed at least through February. We're in good position to absorb some of this downturn without having a major impact.
Senate Finance Committee Chairman Hugh Leatherman said he plans to hold back some $455 million in case of a downturn during the year. This cautious move, Leatherman said, will prevent agencies from having to make any mid-year cuts.
You know, we got a lot of one-time money. I'll be proposing we put $450-500 million into a fund in the case of a downturn during this season. Frank, we really feel for y'all. You're over there trying to tell us what you think's gonna happen with very uncertain terms. If the downturn comes, I want us to have money to where we don't go in mid-year and do cuts. I've been there about 06, 07, 08. I don't want to go back. That's the worst thing that ever happened to an agency. Is mid-year you go in and say you got to cut this much out, because halfway through the session, through the year, it ain't $10 million, $20 million, or whatever that number is. It's double.
On Tuesday, Governor McMaster reiterated his thoughts on the upcoming budget process.
My view is we don't know what's going to happen in the future. The forecasts have been changing as we've gone forward, and we do not expect to have nearly as much as we had early expected to have. So I'm hoping that we will not create a new budget and spend extra money, but that we will hold the line with the continuing resolution and wait till we get to January when things are a little more stable and we can see a little better how much is coming in and what our needs are.
Several agency heads met with the committee Tuesday to present their situations, and several others will meet Thursday. We'll follow up with what happened in those meetings, as well as the House Ways and Means Committee. That's the House version of the Senate Finance Committee, which met on Wednesday. And the Federal Emergency Management Agency has approved South Carolina's application for an extra $300 a week in federal unemployment benefits, according to the state newspaper. This money will apply to those who have applied for unemployment benefits dating back to August 1st. It will take around 3 weeks to implement, according to state officials, and it is unclear how long the money will last. On Tuesday, after nearly 6 months, Governor Henry McMaster and DHEC officials announced guidelines for limited outdoor visitation at nursing homes and assisted living facilities. McMaster said that this is one more step toward getting back to regular functions as quickly and as safely as we can.
It's been frustrating for all of those who are worried about a parent, grandparent, or their loved one's well-being. I've spoken with them, perhaps you have too. I've read numerous letters, I've had phone calls, I've had face-to-face conversations, and I've heard the pain and frustration in their voices and in their words. We know that we have no policy or procedure that can eliminate all possibility of risk. We can't do it. But the time has come, based on what we've learned, what we've experienced, to reunite our family members, loved ones, and caregivers safely as best we can.
Now, McMaster mentioned the cases and deaths at nursing homes, and as of September 1st, there have been 5,044 cases among residents and 2,581 among nursing home staff. Sadly, 1,056 residents and 19 staffers have died from COVID-19. But moving forward with the new outdoor visitation plan, each facility will need time to meet the criteria and establish protocols. Each facility is responsible for implementing these guidelines. Here's Dr. Joan Duvey, the State Director of Public Health, talking about the criteria facilities need to meet, as well as when visitations may be suspended.
And these include the disease transmission level within the facility, availability of appropriate amounts of personal protective equipment and staffing, and that testing is occurring at the facility in accordance with the federal CMS testing requirements. There are three triggers that could temporarily suspend visitation at a facility. One, if one or more cases are identified in residents or staff members, visitation must be temporarily suspended until the federal CMS protocols for testing in response to disease at the facility are completed. This could take a few days or longer, depending on whether we identify more cases in addition to the one. Two, if three or more cases are identified in staff members or residents within a 14-day period, visitation must be temporarily suspended and testing must occur per federal CMS guidance. Visitation may resume 14 days after the identification of the last case. Three, for a nursing home, if testing is not occurring per federal CMS requirements, visitation must be temporarily suspended. For assisted living facilities, testing must be occurring per these same CMS protocols within 30 days from when these guidelines are issued, or visitation must be temporarily suspended.
Duvey said that as of today, there are 90 nursing homes in the state that meet the criteria of not having cases among residents or staff within the prior 14 days. And there are 31 nursing homes that have only had one case in the last 14 days and would hopefully soon meet this criteria as well. Dr. Duvey said visitors who have medical documentation showing a negative test in the prior 5 days or a positive antibody test from the previous 30 days can get admittance to the nursing home. If neither of those tests have been done, visitors can only have 15 minutes of visitation. All visitors will pass screenings, remain 6 feet away from loved ones, and will be wearing masks at all times. And as we head out of this medical section, I want to talk about the semester that's ramping up at the University of South Carolina. Up to this point, there have been 6 sororities or fraternities that have been suspended so far at the university, and so have 15 students for violating COVID-19 safety rules, according to the Associated Press. There are currently 1,017 students with active cases, and 60% of quarantine space is occupied at the university. The school has tested nearly 13,000 students since August 1st. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you going to work? Are you running around delivering packages? Are you a medical professional on the front lines? Are you juggling kids, school, and work? We want to know. 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, a message up to 3 minutes long, and where you're calling from and what's going on. 803-563-7169. And AT, since it doesn't sound like we have any messages, I'm going to go ahead and launch into a book report I've been working on for school.
For school. How does your mom say it is?
I haven't sent it to her yet, but she usually proofreads it and then, like, you know, gives me some notes. So, rewrite it. No, since we don't have any messages, and I've been meaning to talk about some of the books I've been reading because I've just been zooming through them. Want to talk about some Michael Crichton books that I've been reading since I've been obsessed. And like we talked about Jurassic Park, that was spurred because I started reading that book. And I just want to say it is a really great read. I know you've checked it out. You told me about it in seventh grade. You had to read it, right?
Oh, I mean, I love that book. Yeah. When I first found out it was a book, I was like, Dad, you have to get me that book.
So yeah, here totally. I am, like, you know, like what was it? 20 years later from seventh grade?
Yeah, 20 years.
I just read the book, and
you're finally catching on.
It's great because it's so different from the movies, obviously, and not just like in the ways people say, yeah. Oh, it's a little bit different. It's completely different. It's like a mashup of the other movies.
It's not the same at all.
So it's funny where you get to see the differences there.
There aren't even dinosaurs.
Yeah, <it's> all, don't ruin it, AT.
Dude, shut up.
But one of the lines I highlighted in the book was from Dr. Ian Malcolm. You know who we know.
Jeff Goldblum.
It's just so hard to separate them again, right? So it's like The Shining. Whenever The Shining, it's hard to differentiate between the characters and the actors. But it's funny because he had this line in the book because they were like, oh, you know, Dr. Malcolm, why are you always wearing black? And this book was written in 1980. And I think 1990. And I think Steve Jobs stole this idea from Dr. Ian Malcolm because when he was asked about why he was wearing all black, he said, I believe my life has value and I don't want to waste it thinking about clothing. I don't want to think about what I will wear in the mornings. And I'm pretty sure that's what Jobs was always saying. And so was
Steve Jobs is a poser. I bet he doesn't even skate, you know?
Well, we're not going to talk too much ill of the dead, but we can talk trash about Elizabeth Holmes, who also copied this and who is a fraudster. So
yeah, very she's a original. Fraudster who doesn't blink as a power play.
Very original coming from her. But want to get back into, I am switching gears. We're going to go back to Pat Conroy right now. I'm back into Prince of Tides, still very slow moving.
Well, you finished your
Lords
other
of Discipline,
one.
Yes.
Lords of Discipline. And you've moved on to Prince of Tides because you're like, I have to go back, right?
I only apparently got 100 pages into, like, I guess maybe it's 600-some pages, Prince of Tides. I was like, it's just a lot.
But you have I got some an notes. Admission about the first time that you re-picked up Prince of Tides to read it again, don't you? You picked it up, and then what happened? You passed out.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, okay, we're back in it. Then I'm like, psychiatrist office. So yeah, we're making slow headway there. But the good thing about reading these on the Kindle is that you can highlight passages and it will remember them. It will file them away on your Amazon cloud and you can go back and visit them. And I got a couple good passages from Lords of
You're
Discipline.
A tech wizard.
I am a tech wizard, just like Elizabeth Holmes. And
just a drop of blood.
And I just want to start by saying that Lords of Discipline, like, just exceeded my expectations. I had put off reading it because I thought it was going to be some predictable coming-of-age experience mixed with the intensity of a military institute, which it
this
is
one,
those things, but it's not
but
so predictable.
This one has dinosaurs in it.
Oh, yeah, if you want. It's definitely some sort of dinosaurs for sure.
There are dinosaurs.
And you also get delicious, snarky prose that still holds weight today. For example, Pat Conroy describing Charlestonians. Here we go. Most of all, they elude facile description, but they do possess a municipal character that has a lot to do with two centuries of scriptural belief that they are simply superior to other people of the earth. If you do not subscribe to this theory or are even offended by it, well, it simply means that you are from away, that you are obviously not a Charlestonian. I mean...
I mean, that's the nicest way I've ever heard someone say they like the smell of their own farts.
No, I think it was that might have been specific to South Abroad, too, but yes. And then here's a great description he used for describing Columbia.
Oh, which, this I'm interested in.
Which, yeah, you're going to love. Columbia, South Carolina is a difficult city to love once you've lived in Charleston. It is a functional city located in the dead center of the state, 100 miles from the mountains and 100 miles from the sea. Its summers are merciless and its winters are bitter, and it has all the homeliness of America's industrial Midlands. But it is a vital, frisky city unburned by the pretensions and the genealogical sinuosities of Charleston. Sherman had raised Columbia during the Civil War. It made you wonder how much the nature of Charleston depended on its deliverance from pillage and fire. So just like
he
just
says, he basically
in.
Is saying we, yeah. Columbia, it is a city.
Yes. Yep. There it is. It's a city.
It is a city.
It took the brunt of Sherman just so Charleston could survive. So, again, that was from Lords of Discipline. Just really some really great, great masterful writing there by Pat Conroy. You guys probably already know. You've probably read a lot of these books already, but I rediscovered them and really enjoyed them. So I think you would too. Check them out. Your library. Can check them out, you know, the ebooks, since most libraries aren't open again. That's what I've been doing.
Absolute
and
tease.
Just
right
getting
here.
It. And I got, you know, I got Dune on hold. I got some more books on hold. So we'll be doing some more book reports. You know, especially if you're tapped out from the Netflix, if you're tapped out from the Hulus of the world, if you want to get away from the HBO Max's AT, I mean, tell me about reading. You know about it. You've read some books before.
Tell them about reading. AT. Yeah. Reading, it's great. There are words. What else?
Well, you had that rough go. You bought those books that you thought were going to be good, and then
I know.
Have you recovered from that?
It's been really tough. It's been really hard. I'm struggling to find that next science fiction space opera book that I love, you know? And the last book of The Expanse, the ninth book, is supposed to be coming out. I don't know when it is, and I've just sort of been waiting with bated breath. It's really sad.
I would say
that I can't find a good one.
Check out Goodreads. It's a great website, great app that keeps track of your reading too. But you could also find books that are similar to books that you like. It starts like processing and thinking about it.
The problem is with these spacey sci-fi books. Like it gets a little high concept sometimes, and it feels like the characters in it aren't real. You know what I mean? And it seems forced. Like these guys are like, this is a slick sort of setting and an idea for a book, but they suck at writing people. Like that's always hard for me. So it's tough. I'm looking for something new. Maybe I'll read one of your boring.
I will say, fiction. Lords of Discipline really got you through. And I've read Jurassic Park I think almost a day.
I could reread Jurassic Park. Yeah. Oh, you know what books I wanted to read that I found out were books in the same way of Jurassic Park is the Hannibal Lecter books, The Silence of the Lambs and stuff. I think I'm going to get into those and read those. I haven't ever read those.
That could be our next book report.
Yeah.
Because we got to keep
Hannibal Lecter. Cool. Cool guy.
But until then, you're just going to stick with you're going to play it safe, Fast and Furious. Just keep
Fast
it.
Fast and Furious.
Keep your feet on the ground.
I've bought all the novelizations of the Fast and Furious, and it's really, really sustaining me. Guy Fieri and the Fast and Furious really sustaining me through this pandemic. Thank you so much to both of you. Praise Hosanna.
Well, if you want to join our book club, whatever this is, you can. Everyone's allowed to. Let us know what you're reading. 803-563-7169. And if you have some recommendations.
Or if you're really angry about how you've been characterized by Pat Conroy.
Yeah. If you're listening from South Abroad, you're probably not even going to bother listen/even respond to that paragraph I just read for you. A provocation. A war of words, my man.
And, what does it say about Greenville that he didn't even bash it?
There was an upcountry reference, but it was nothing really relevant.
Like, that's rude that he didn't even bother.
Let's just say I didn't even bother highlighting it. Oh, I'm sorry, our upstate listeners. I love you.
My babies.
No, but let us know what you're reading. Let us know what you're watching. We're very interested, and I know everyone else is looking for recommendations, too. So 803-563-7169.
And we can't stress enough that you got to get those voicemails under 3 minutes.
You got
because
to.
We've gotten a few that don't meet that criteria, and we can't really use them because they don't end, you know? So it's weird. So if you've called in and we haven't used it, it's just because you've gone over the time limit. So, I mean, you could try again. We want to be able to air it. And, Ben, I also got your book recommendation, and I will look into it. Okay?
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
Everything.
Okay. Okay, now finish, Gavin. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Thanks
for
listening.
From your dungeon. From your dungeon.
From like the basement of the State House, essentially. Actually, if you walk in the State House doors, the first door to the right is where I'm hiding right now. So I'm going to go back upstairs once they get done here. But thanks for listening to the pod, guys. Leave us a review on iTunes. We'd appreciate that. And you can also stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. They're out there hustling, too. We appreciate them. And consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Can we call this SC Lead Night Live at the day, in the day?
What? Coming to you live from the day in the night.
But at day.